romance che hai. Me la dai,
no,
me la dai,
no,
me la dai la tua pensée. Io ne tengo un'altra in petto e l'unisco tutte e due.
Pensée mia, pensée tua, per ricordo del nostro amor.
Before we go to Art Focus with host Joseph Galavan, I have an announcement. KBOO is sad to announce the death of former volunteer Nancy Beamer. Nancy was a loyal listener to KBOO and often answered phones during our membership drives. She loved KBOO and gave her time and financial support to many different nonprofit organizations. Friends say she loved to be outdoors, loved the mountains, the beach, skiing and walking on the beach during sunset. Nancy died on July 14th at the age of 71. Her memorial service will be on Saturday, July 26th at 1 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church's Channing Chapel.
Still have a go. I'd like to be a gallery. Put you all inside my show. Andy Warhol looks a scream.
I'm Joseph Galavan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio Portland. My guests this week are Arnold and Jakob Panda. They're talking about their show Fabrication Corrosion at the Mark Woolley Gallery in Pioneer Place Mall. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
This show is Arnold's paintings on velvet and Jakob's photography printed on metal. So we'll start talking to Arnold first. The main image for the show that you see everywhere is Miley Cyrus with her big mouth open. Yes. It's called Mouseketeer. It's a big painting on velvet. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I think Miley has been sort of in our consciousness of late, and she's made a pretty bold career shift and just through her image and sort of the manipulation of her own sense of identity, and I thought that was worth capturing and kind of on, you know, sort of in an indelible way.
Well, you see a picture everywhere. I mean, you know, Rolling Stone cover and just know, she's the icon that parents love to be terrified of.
Yes.
Why did you want to paint a sort of close up like that?
Well, I wanted to, in general with this show, pick subjects that were really in a sort of a at their most memorable moment. And that might be a moment of incredible success. It might be an incredible tragedy, or sort of an unexpected narrative that they never planned as part of a career move. But in the case of Miley, certainly, I think there was, even that was sort of unexpected in a lot of ways. I thought it was actually not the greatest performance, but it was very effective for her career. And, you know, and traditionally you've seen that, all the way back to Elvis, who also appeared on velvet paintings, you know, these sort of icons that that sort of rattle the culture and shake us out of our sense of what's normal and kind of change the rules. And I think she did a really good job of that as a sort of pop culture symbol.
So she's got a bolt in her tongue. Tell us about that.
In general, I like to, you know, put my own twist on it. And I thought there was some, the fact I put the Mickey Mouse symbol as her tongue bolt, just because, you know, she's a Disney kid. And I think in the narrative that sort of shocked people was the whole notion of, you know, she was this child star that our children watched and looked up to, and now she's sort of transformed into this sort of sex object, and so the fear that parents have of their own children sort of following that narrative and as sort of a role model, and I thought that was worth reflecting on what was sort of the core fear of her transformation.
There's another painting of her actually sort of on her knees, and it's called Blurred Lines, right? She's in front of parallel black and white lines from
I titled it Blurred Line Singular, because there was the whole idea of kind of crossing a line.
Maybe describe what the event was at that
is depicting.
Right, right. She was at the VMA Awards, I believe it was the MTV Awards, and she sort of did this scandalous twerking, you know, techno dance that kind of came out of nowhere, and I think she sort of spontaneously ad-libbed with Robin Thicke and grinded on him in a kind of a you know, very sort of scandalous way that nobody saw coming, and so it was this great sort of like moment of kind of shock value and sort of somewhat poor taste, I guess, but at the same time kind of surrealistic. There was a lot of, it was almost like a sort of dream, mm-hmm. Or nightmare. So as a media moment, it was fantastic in all its sort of the bizarre nature of it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I wanted to kind of capture that, but also the idea of a line being crossed, you know, for her and maybe even for the culture en masse. And then also kind of the idea of just, you know, good and bad taste and that kind of line of like what is good and what's bad and,
yeah,
you know, what's art and what's, you know, not art.
What you leave out when you're painting, it becomes black. It is because of the black velvet. How did you, in that picture, decide which bits just stay unpainted?
Well, in general, the medium, you know, is obviously, there's a lot of shadow play and the idea of the abyss and the darkness and coming out of the darkness, light coming out of the darkness. So it's a very paradoxical medium. I sort of fell in love with it. I did it at first almost to kind of as an ironic little sort of fun thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Because it's a bad taste thing.
Yeah, and I kind of wanted to do, so this is like 10 years ago or more, and I was originally kind of doing it. I was going to do a whole show on various types of pinups because that was kind of the theme of the show, and then I just found myself doing these velvet paintings because I sort of fell in love with the process, and it was very difficult and challenging, and I also thought it was very beautiful, and you could create beautiful images with it. And I think I wanted to push that envelope a bit, the sort of preconception of what art should be and what's kitsch and what's art, and mm-hmm. and make something so kind of stunning that it would sort of force you to take it seriously. And I think now with the subject matter of, as I sort of did more than I realized, I think when Michael Jackson died, I did a series with him, and I really found that the medium itself was a great, and the preconception that people have about the medium sort of lent itself to these kind of modern folk heroes, mm-hmm. That we have in our culture.
And are you using some kind of different brush technique from what you'd find in a thrift store? I mean, you're using a big brush, right?
I mean, a lot of what you see in thrift stores is like silk screen prints. And so these are original paintings. And they're essentially just done with oil paint. And using a fairly dry brush, not a lot of different mediums, just this, you know, because you kind of want to work out of the darkness. It's a sort of the Rembrandt approach, if you will, sort of poor man's Rembrandt, and where you sort of come out of the sort of the deeper, darker hues and really sort of layer and let it dry, and ultimately you end up painting on the paint and really stay away from the black because it's a very unforgiving medium.
So the subject matter is a lot of people in LA, some kind of over people with too much plastic surgery, people, celebs are at their low points, like Lindsay Lohan, three different mugshots from her arrest. How did the medium lead you to that subject matter?
Velvets tend to depict these moments of like Christ on the cross or Elvis crying, or these sort of moments that are sort of canonized of how we remember these sort of folk heroes. And I think in the case of like a Lindsay Lohan, I mean, she's a great example of someone who's been this kind of slow sort of, you know, descent into really, you know, addiction and you know, sort of poor choices that have impacted her career in a sort of somewhat seemingly irreversible way. And that kind of attrition has really become her narrative and how we know her. So I wanted to capture that, mm-hmm. in a way, and also kind of compress it, into one moment. You know, and then that's sort of, there's a few paintings that kind of relate to that. There's a larger painting called Flash that's probably the largest piece in the show that is really the centerpiece of her kind of multiple images of Lindsay in a car surrounded by paparazzi and just in this sort of
so
cycle.
Three people in the car, right? Well, two in the front, one in the back?
Yeah, that's right? They're all Lindsay Lohan. They're all sort of her in different moments of this sort of same cycle of self-destruction.
And two paparazzi on either side shooting, and then there's this big white flash coming out of the back of the car. Is that meant to be coming from behind the car, or
no, that's
reflection?
Actually supposed to be a reflection on the windshield. It's kind of to bring the paparazzi into it in this sort of abstract sort of way, that there's this constant presence and to kind of also part of the show too is to kind of see a little bit from their perspective. It's not an attack on celebrities. It's really meant to be somewhat sympathetic in that they've really chosen a life that has a lot of caveats that are not exactly, well, certainly not how we live. I mean, we might have 15 minutes of them, right? But this is a day-to-day thing.
Yeah.
And
Jakob, you're Arnold's brother. And you've been taking pictures around Los Angeles for a long time. You've selected a bunch for this show.
Yeah.
The imagery seems to be outdoors LA, the sort of a bit more rundown version of LA, but also very recognizable imagery. So just tell us a bit about it.
Yeah. Well, this body of work is actually, I've been collecting it, these images for the last few years, and in part just, you know, as part of the process of going down to LA a lot, working with Arnold down there. And, you know, in a way, you know, what's nice about kind of landing in a city, you know, every once in a while is you have that moment where everything is very fresh and you look at everything kind of very freshly. And so I find that oftentimes I'll do a lot of shooting the first week or so that I'm down there. And, yeah, for me, it's been, you know, because my main medium is working in film. And so I've really, over the past few years, started to really get drawn to photography even more because of its immediacy, whereas film is such a kind of long, developing, kind of like building a skyscraper type of medium. So, you know, in these last few years, these trips down there, there's been this kind of process of, you know, reflectivity, even in just the process that we're undergoing in our career and the environment that we're in. And so I think these photographs have kind of come out of that mindset and milieu.
There's a series, payphone series, and it's just old payphones. Some of them are ripped out. Some of them are painted over.
Yeah.
You know, coffee cups, the book's gone.
Right. Yeah, I mean, in many ways, I mean, really, this stuff is kind of classic street photography. But what I'm finding is just these incredible still lives. And, you know, oftentimes when you're moving around these vast spaces like Los Angeles, you come across these incredible details. And I think I'm definitely drawn to that. And even right now, as we're kind of in this, you know, hyper technological transition to the digital world, we're all, you know, wandering around with our cell phones. You know, the technology is happening, is evolving so quickly that the ruins are evolving more quickly. So the whole notion of like pay phones was something that, you know, and we used to have our pagers were the high tech thing, and we would run to a pay phone and put the quarter in and make our call. And that seemed really advanced. And now all those pay phones are just these kind of remnants, many of them kind of half torn apart and not working. And so that I just kind of started popping up, and each one of them was, you know, spray painted or, you know, half bashed apart, you know, that they looked so battered and worn, and their history was just really very apparent. But also there was this kind of strange beauty to them. Sometimes these incredible colored backdrops, or just the way the light was hitting them, or the way they had just kind of worn through the ages. So I just started shooting those and kind of developed a whole collection of that. So the piece that's in the show is actually two pieces. One is a group of nine images, and then there's another kind of singular piece. And yeah, those were just kind of found, and then kind of found each other in the editing, you know, of the photographs to kind of create those pieces.
And there are other ones, Freeway, the I-10 West, just mm-hmm. shooting silhouettes from under a elevated freeway. And there are images of, you know, those L.A. palm trees that are really thin with a little sprout on top.
Yeah, yeah.
What was it about that imagery? There's no corrosion in a sense there. What's
no,
going on?
I think the other part of what's going on in that show is setting and placing the viewer in a space, and that space being Los Angeles. And some of that work is really a fascination with just light play. Like the freeways, some of the stuff that you're describing right now are these black and white shots. Most of the show is color, but a number of the pieces are black and white. And I'm really also drawn to just the reductive nature of silhouettes in the landscape. And so that series, there's the I-10 West was actually just shot about a month ago, going from Palm Springs to Los Angeles through these, underneath these overpass exchanges. And I think I'm drawn to a sense of motion in photography. So that piece is actually five separate photographs kind of moving through a space.
Oh, you're each one moving in the vehicle?
Yeah, I'm basically...
I was driving, it's okay.
Yeah, you're right,
just stick your hand out the window.
Rapidly firing. Well, it was funny, we had actually just been in Palm Springs for about a week in 110 degree weather, and we were driving to LA, and I think our brains were so cooked by the heat that it felt kind of hallucinogenic driving, and so everything looked really cool. So that I was just photographing, and that sequence kind of came out of that drive. But again, by reducing it to those silhouettes, to just that spareness of it, it also kind of evokes the scope of it, the vastness of it, and in a weird way, the not necessarily loneliness of it, but just that kind of that space where it's this, kind of easy to get separated from each other and be kind of, detached. So there's a spookiness to it, I guess, in that sense.
I'm Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guests this week are Arnold and Jakub Panda. These artistic brothers have put together a show called Fabrication Corrosion. And the fabrication part is Arnold's paintings on velvet, and corrosion is Jakob's photography printed on metal. So, Jakub, just tell us why you chose these metal. Why do you print on metal?
We knew that the style of the work was going to be really different, but we also wanted it to be thematically interwoven, and I think by nature it just was, because we're kind of operating in the same environments quite a bit. But we also wanted to really, since painting on velvet is such a very specific kind of bold choice, we wanted to kind of, we had talked about that, and so the idea of printing the photographs on metal kind of came into play as a sense of just the physicality of what these images are being seen on. So then I started investigating the, printing on metal, and found this interesting process called dye sublimation, where the images are basically baked on to the metal surface in a kind of a chemical layer that actually makes the image float in just a kind of, micro level above the surface.
Are they applied by a printer, like a spray of liquid, or?
Yeah, what? From what I understand, the image is printed onto what is effectively a piece of chemical paper, and that is then laid into a liquid that then the metal, that then lays on the surface of the metal. That's baked at high heat, and the paper essentially dissolves and disappears, and that image ends up staying kind of floating in that space. What was amazing about it, just because this is the first time I've printed in this way, and just the vivid nature of the color, the blacks are just incredibly black, the whites really pop, and as it turns out, partly what's happening is that it's similar to the kind of you know, classic oil painting using glazes where light passes through the paint and reflects back out through the surface below the paint. A similar thing is happening with these photographs. So the light, they take on a very luminous quality, almost as if they're backlit. Mm-hmm. But it's very subliminal. It's very subtle, but they've turned out very vividly.
And Arnold, the medium painting on velvet, do you see it as, are you going to carry on doing it? You feel like you've done it?
You know, to tell you the truth, I did feel like I had sort of reached a plateau with it until I sort of discovered this celebrity element. And in that regard, you know, this is my second series. I think this series is more evolved conceptually, but of taking on icons in this medium. And it, you know, I may continue to do it. I do want to go back to some other, mm-hmm. I don't want to become, you know, the velvet painting.
The velvet
brother.
Guy. So the imagery of Kim Kardashian. Mm-hmm. Sorry, there's one called One Love, which is Rihanna and Chris Brown, mm-hmm. and where before they've been fighting and after. Mm-hmm. And there's also a Justin Bieber where he's young right. now, and then future ugly, right? Old?
Well, it's sort of, that one's called Good, Bad, Ugly. And I think it's like we've watched kind of an arc of this sort of, you know, beloved child from the web who has all this talent. And then, and so he's kind of reached this sort of almost an end of an arc mm-hmm. in his career. And he's, you know, barely 20 years old or, you know, barely able to vote. With the Rihanna piece, that's definitely a more difficult subject, but it also, that one depicts, the image of Rihanna in the ER after being beaten by Chris mm-hmm. Brown. And that was a really difficult painting to create. I thought it was important to put it in context. Originally, I was just going to paint her face, and I thought, you know, this really needs more. So I wanted to kind of show the complex nature of relationships, and it's really a story about, or a painting about a relationship and how... you know, in the case of a figure like Rihanna, a major celebrity, that it's all out there for everyone to see, and that sort of that your privacy is sacrificed in the process of celebrity, and also the kind of tragic nature of not only her being abused, but also this person who's also, as I was painting it, I was finding myself seeing not the sadness, not just of being having been beaten, but also the sadness of almost like what was going on in her head of like, oh, I guess we're gonna have to break up now, or you know, I don't know what was going on in her head, but just these feelings of someone who was heartbroken. So I wanted that to come through as well. So that's a very complicated painting. I think it's probably one of the ones I'm most proud of. In the show.
You've brought in some music for us to have a little listen to. What's it called?
We brought in a track. It's kind of the main soundtrack for our new film called Subtext. And it's that's going to be having its Portland premiere next month at the PDX Film Festival. And it's a song by LA-based band Bell Gardens. And it's kind of... We broke the song out for the film, and we thought we'd share the full song just to kind of give people a taste of our next project that can be seen very soon.
Well, let's give it a listen.
All right.
That was Through the Rain by Bell Gardens, and that's from the soundtrack to Subtext, and that's Jakob and Arnold's new movie. Tell us a little bit about the movie.
Yeah, Subtext is a short film that we actually shot last year in July, so about a year ago, and completed it over the winter. And we actually just had our world premiere of the film at the Palm Springs International Short Film Festival.
It's about texting.
Yeah, it's basically a short film about the perils of navigating a relationship through texting. And it's a short drama and all told through texts.
Romantic relationship.
Yeah, maybe mm-hmm. you want to speak.
Yeah, it really kind of goes into the sort of the realm of, you know, navigating a relationship, the very private moments or personal moments that we're now relegating to texts. So the sort of new form of communication and
but also the manipulations that can be done through that.
There's this sense of the technology allows you to push the boundaries a little bit.
How do you visually show texts and people?
Well, we had to really think about the composition quite a bit because of the live action, because it's a live action film with actors, and sort of compose it so the text.
We used motion graphics, so we decided not to do like close ups of the phone, but because we really the piece is also it's a 17-minute movie with no dialogue, but very intimate acting and performances by Cora Benesch and C.C. Sheffield, who are two leads in the film, and so we decided to do motion graphics. So you literally are seeing the characters reacting and responding to the texts while they're typing out in the frame.
So you actually see words on screen. Mm-hmm. You got to be able to read.
Reading is an important
is it hard to read and look at faces?
You know what's interesting is we thought, well, boy, this is either going to seem really tedious, like watching a subtitled movie, but what we discovered was that, you know, in the first couple of minutes, people will watch it and you're like, oh wow, it's all texts. But since we're so used to texting, that within a few moments of the film, you completely forget that you're reading the movie, and by the time you come through, you're like, holy smokes, this whole movie.
And the sort of texting vernacular as well. I mean, sort of the sort of abridged words and little sound bites and occasional mm-hmm. emoticons that are now sort of ubiquitous forms of communication now that, yeah, there's this sense that you're really in on it, or it's very voyeuristic.
Very obviously. Voyeuristic. And also, finding ways to differentiate, so certain people having different grammar, different approaches to the way they type. Kind of in a way mm-hmm. creating a sense of the voice.
So they're not typos. They're intentional.
Occasionally shorthand.
How did the audience react? Did you get a read on it?
You know, the great thing about filmmaking is, and even on the writing side is you know when it's working when people, respond to the same things. And that's so we're hopeful because it seems like that's the case with Subtext, is that there's these moments that are like. Where people kind of respond or laugh at the same moments, but
the audience was really very verbal and responsive in Palm Springs. So, but that's the only real major public showing we've had so far. So mm-hmm. it's really fresh.
So yes. August 28th, Portland Film Festival.
Yeah, it's going to be at the Living Room Theaters at 8:30 in the evening at mm-hmm. the Portland Film Festival. And also, if anybody wants to see the trailer for the film, we have a website, subtextmovie.com.
I'm Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. My guests this week were Arnold and Jakob Panda. They were talking about their show Fabrication Corrosion, which is on now at the Mark Woolley Gallery in Pioneer Place on the fifth floor, Atrium Building. And it runs through September 14th. Thanks very much for coming into KBOO.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Joseph.
Tune in Tuesday night at 6 p.m. to Out Loud, KBOO's queer culture radio show.
Out Loud celebrates and serves the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, questioning, and allied communities.
Out Loud features interviews with local and national community groups, authors, musical talent, and anyone from the queer community.
Connect with us online at kboo.fm/outloud. Tune in Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio and Peña Flamenca de Portland are proud to co-sponsor Lily Last and Pepe Rafael on Friday, July 25th at 7:30 p.m. Pepe Rafael of Pepe and the Bottle Blondes will team up with Lily Last of Stomptown Flamenco for an evening of flamenco. Again, that's Lily Last and Pepe Rafael on Friday, July 25th at 7:30 p.m. at the Steep and Thorny Way to Heaven, located at Southeast 2nd Avenue and Madison Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Human Rights Watch has released a report stating that the FBI encouraged and at times paid Muslims to encourage terrorist plots after 9/11. The report found that half of those convicted in terrorist cases since 2001 were part of FBI sting operations. The Deputy Washington Director of the Human Rights Watch said that many of these people would never have committed a crime if not for law enforcement encouraging, pressuring, and sometimes paying them to commit terrorist acts. The Human Rights Watch report cites cases in which law enforcement officials were the ones to come up with the criminal plan, making it easy and possible for people to commit crimes who otherwise wouldn't. This was an issue in the case of Mohammed Mohammed in Portland, who was set up in a sting operation by the FBI for an alleged terror plot in 2010.